This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait. Let's get
this is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 1 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. Alan Han, no Bart Scott. He will be on the K Show today. See, he's big time in us. You know, they needed somebody to come in and
Han.
And step on the show and step into the show and help them out for the day. So Bart was agreed to do that. And I just thought, okay, so he'll just do 6 straight hours of radio. That's fine, right? No. Now he's big time enough. So instead, you know what you get today? You get Han Solo today. That's what you get today. Some old school Han Solo. And that means the buffet is open. Grab your plates. Get in line. 800-919-3776 is the number. And of course, you can get us on Twitter and Instagram. See, I did it wrong. At Bart and Han. Yeah. And Instagram. And we also still did IG Live.
We'll do it live!
At 12:30. And I told a little story on IG Live about how you need to be aware of the way things are covered media-wise and all that stuff. And I'll get into all that throughout the show. So 2 hours with you, me and you, on a Monday. A little hot. Stay inside. Get the AC up if you can, if you got one. If not, get a fan. If not, get a cool rag. Put it around your neck. It always works. It does. It's amazing. But it can't. Cool rag around your neck. Sit back, chill, listen any way you can, and just try to stay as cool as possible. We'll go with Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And I mean, the obvious here thing to me is we have live sports all week now. We had it over the weekend. This is it. Last week was our last week of talking about life without live sports. And we hope it's not short-lived. We hope it's the beginning of getting back to normal. As we had over the weekend, Yankees-Mets scrimmages, which were televised and did very well in the ratings. I mean, the greatest ratings. Everybody watched, winning in the ratings. And it was because we got to see not just an indomitable Yankee team that just looks so good when they're healthy, but we got to see both local teams play, and we got to see some live action. And the broadcasters as well. It was good to hear all the broadcasters from both networks, SNY and YES, back to work getting it done. That's great. Wednesday, we'll have NBA scrimmages beginning. And then, of course, Thursday, opening night. And you can hear Yankees Nationals opening night right here. Right here, 98.7 ESPN. So you don't want to turn it off. K Show leading right into that. Are you kidding me? So you got that happening. So as we're watching, of course, these games, you got to think that, okay, it's different. And you knew it was going to be different. You knew it. And it's not a surprise. There's no one in the building. We already understood that. We've seen what it looks like in other sports. So we got that sense already that it might be a little strange. But was it? Because, I mean, aside from getting used to the empty seats, and it was kind of funny to see some home runs just like land in the bleachers and then just bounce around. No one's running to get it. You know, that's stuff a little odd. But did it take away from the broadcast? I don't think so. I didn't think so. You had crowd noise pumped in both stadiums, Citi Field and Yankee Stadium. And again, it was all right. I'll tell you what, who has the most pressure on them? Whoever it is, right? The man or woman who is dealing, who is handling those buttons that you have to press, where the crowd goes from like the white noise kind of murmuring to, you know, a rise in anticipation noise that you hear when the ball is in play, when also there might be that kind of reduced murmur if something the other team does, right? The hush or whatever it is. There was one time I saw a foul ball, and it was a line off the bat, so you heard the anticipation roar, and then once you realized that thing was going foul, it like cut off real quick. Like, whoops. Like, what you don't want is also to have like the opponent, you know, the opposing pitcher strike out the home batter and then hear the crowd roar. I'm like, ooh, I hit the wrong button. Like, that's the kind of stuff. So there's some pressure there. You want to get that right because you don't want the players getting mad. But Gerrit Cole, man, I love that. Already, like, my favorite Yankee. I mean, there's no question Gerrit Cole's my favorite Yankee. And he talked about how, as a pitcher, when you're locked in, you're not really, like he said, he's not the type that looks into the crowd. You see that sometimes where a pitcher between pitches will sometimes look up. He's not really looking at anything, just looking away for the most part, not focused on one thing. But some pitchers do that. They just kind of look around. What's going on in the stadium? You get caught up in the moment. But Cole talked about how you do notice it a little bit, but not too much. Because once you're locked in, it's competition. I think as a viewer, I felt the same way. Once there was certain bat, I wanted to watch Aaron Judge. How does he look? How does he feel? How does Stanton look? You know, both of them went yard. Actually, Judge was just mashing the ball all weekend. You know, how does Gary look behind the plate? Is he still a little lazy? Has he gotten better? All that stuff. I mean, there's all different things you're looking at. And once you start watching the game for the game, you're not paying nearly as attention to the fact that there's no one there. The cardboard cutout thing is kind of cool at Citi Field. I'm not going to completely say it's stupid, but I don't think it's necessary. In fact, I think the YES Network already showed you that you can take advantage of that space by putting up a really large green screen and putting ads on it. And you might see more of that than you will cutouts. But let me get back to Gerrit Cole real quick. And again, 800-919-3776 for those. Like I give you my take. I actually found it wasn't nearly as distracting as I thought, having the piped-in crowd noise and also having empty seats. Didn't really bother me. Now, did it not feel like a big-time game? Of course. Like, you know, when you see crowds, when you hear the real crowd, it definitely feels bigger time. But it didn't take away from me watching the game. But on Gerrit Cole, he spoke after Friday's scrimmage. He didn't play against the Mets all weekend. He had his workout on Friday. And just listening to him talk, he is like, this is the player you want to have. This is the kind of athlete you want to be. It's this guy. Because he's a complete nerd about his sport. Absolutely nerds out. He loves it. He wants to know all the details. He loves talking it. He's the guy, and because he's so damn good, that you love to have in your clubhouse for younger pitchers and younger players to be around, because he's willing to talk about his craft. And in fact, he's just as curious about learning as he is in teaching. You love having guys like that around. And yet, he's also competitive as anything. I mean, you see that burn when he makes a mistake, and they're rare, but when he does, you see it in his eyes. Like, he burns out there. You love that kind of stuff. Like, that's what you want. And it made me think, we're excited about Gleyber Torres and his potential. We're excited about Aaron Judge, and if he's healthy, can he get back to that guy? We remember when he's healthy how dangerous of a hitter he is, and we saw it this weekend. We just saw it. You make one mistake, he's taken out of the park. And you can get excited about those types of things with the Yankees. But when you have a guy like Gerrit Cole, not just for what he is as a pitcher, but just everything about him as an athlete, and then you have DJ LeMahieu, who we really haven't seen yet, but we know what he's about. Another guy, pros pro, unbelievably talented, kind of low-key, but you can just see, he just, like, DJ LeMahieu is like that quintessential, like, baseball kind of player. Doesn't really want attention, doesn't need it, not into all the, you know, the frivolous stuff, but yet, the guy is a pro, and I mean really good, and he knows it, confident. Watches the game with a different kind of eye, right? Discerning eye. When you have guys like that in your clubhouse, you got something special. And the Yankees, I think, have something special. Now, they got to figure out a lot of different things with their lineup. I mean, Talkman's made a case, hasn't he, for fourth outfielder? But then again, Clint Frazier, masked and all, which, again, I admire that. Shoe game, by the way, off the charts. You see those cleats? Those were sweet. Well, those, I think those are Jordans, right? Those are the Jordan 1s. He showed you something. And then there's, of course, Miguel Andujar, who's like, hey, by the way, got to find a place for me because all I do is hit the ball. And he does. So they've got decisions to make there, and that's a good problem to have. On the Mets side of things, I wouldn't take anything away. I wouldn't take anything too much out of the weekend. I wouldn't start panicking. The three relievers they'll have at the back of the bullpen did okay. They did fine. I don't think you have to worry at all there. The kid that played third base for them, Moroff, he's not going to play third base. But the Mets do still have an issue at third base. It's pretty clear, right? They still have to figure out that position because they're still piecemealing in that spot. But, you know, I don't get caught up in the errors and stuff like that. I'm not worried nearly as much about any of that stuff. They were fine. They're absolutely fine. They didn't show you everything that they have either. But it's interesting. And I'll tell you what, it leads me into something else now. I looked at the Yankees, and maybe it was just because we haven't seen them. I feel like they still are our best chance, New York. Now, you guys have heard me, and again, this is a throwback show. We're doing a little Han Solo today with Bart off. He's going to be on the K-Show today. And you guys who listen to me at night know I bring this up a lot because it's true. We have not won a championship in New York since the Giants won the Super Bowl. That's 8 years. And everybody might think, well, that's not so bad. It's 8 years. Some cities go, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Look, Cleveland, look how long they waited to win a championship. And we're not Cleveland. Like, that's the thing about where we are right now, right? Like, the Yankees are, I think, what New Yorkers want to believe New York should be like in all sports. It's like the best team money can buy, classic, iconic, powerful, you know, dominating, all those things, right? That's what you think. That's New York. The Yankees represent what we think New York should look like from the outside. But instead, we're more like the Mets. We're kind of hilariously average, kind of goofy, you know, got a couple of, you know, pretty much overrated, although you still have like an icon or two, you know, you got a little something, but for the most part, it's like a lot of poor management and a lot of wasted money. You know, it's like not as good as you think and, you know, hoping for a return to some, you know, past time where there was some shine on the city. It's like what we want our sports to be in New York is like what the Brooklyn Bridge represents, right? Instead, we're more like the BQE. Yeah, you know, let's be honest. I mean, and I'm not saying it because all our teams do suck. This is ridiculous. So Elias Sports Bureau, who puts together all this numbers, right? They put this thing out that it was everything I've been railing about going back to October 2018 on Han Solo at night when I was flipping out about how we have just succumbed to this idea that we're just a city of rebuilding and all our teams are bad and we haven't won a championship in 8 years. And we're like, but wait a minute. The Mets got to a World Series, also ran. The Rangers got to a Stanley Cup Finals, also ran. So now what? Now that's okay. So that's what we're going to do now? Now we're also ran? That's what we are the city of? We're the city of participation trophy? Come on now. It's New York. You've got two of everything and three hockey teams. How are you possibly this bad for this long? So Elias says, since the Giants beat the Patriots in 2012, that February 2012, New York City area teams, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, and NHL, have completed a combination of, with all those teams, 72 seasons without a championship. 72. That's twice as long as the next longest drought in the last 100 years. 72. Previously, it was 36. 03 to 07 was a bit of a drought. That's 40 years. All right. 62 to 69 was a drought. Again, that's it. There weren't nearly as many teams in 62 to 69, as you know. There was no Islanders. There were no Devils. The Mets had just appeared, and the Jets also had just appeared. So then the Knicks and the Mets won championships then. And actually, the Nets weren't there in 62 to 69 either. The Nets were an ABA team. Showed up later. So this is what we're dealing with right now. A whole generation of fans who live in New York, they don't understand the level of mediocrity that we have reached here. And that's why it feels like, are the Yankees our only hope? I think they are. Who else is close? Don't tell me who can build towards a championship. Tell me who's close. Give me that team, other than the Yankees, that you feel like could be on the verge of a championship. If you tell me the Rangers, that's a young team. Now, anybody can win the cup, as we know, especially in the restart. Everybody's got a great chance to win the Stanley Cup. But if you put your money on anybody, are you putting your money on the Rangers or Islanders to win the Cup in the restart? I'd love to see it. Of course, I'd love to see the Islanders do it. But am I putting my hard-earned money on them? No. No way. If I gave you all the teams that are playing right now, now, again, the Knicks don't count, and of course you wouldn't put your money on them. They don't count right now, and neither do the Devils. Take them out of the equation because they're not part of the restarts and also the coming up NFL season. Who is the team that you would put your money on, your hard-earned money on, to win a championship? The Yankees are the runaway favorites compared to everybody else. Are they not? And then after that, what are you thinking? What could you possibly think when you look forward there? So it's the biggest concern about what's happening with our teams in the city. Is there's an ownership change now with the Mets. There's changes usually at coaching. You'll get that with the Knicks. The Nets might have that change with the coaching. The Mets just had another change with the coaching. The Jets might have to have a change in the coaching if Adam Gase doesn't get it right. I mean, if the Jets are bad this year and Sam Darnold doesn't look like he's making steps towards becoming the quarterback that they drafted him to become, then Adam Gase has got to go. They can't wait any longer. You can't waste another year of this kid's career. He's got to go. There's so much pressure on him. The Giants just made a coaching change. Joe Judge has zero experience as a head coach at any level, and they made him a head coach at the NFL level. It doesn't mean he's going to fail. I don't know what he's going to do. But they didn't hire somebody that comes in like a Ron Rivera or a McCarthy that tells you, this guy's got a resume. He's done it before, so you can feel pretty confident about what he's doing. They didn't hire a guy like that. So how are you supposed to believe in what they're doing? All that's left of the Yankees, once again. And it's been a long time. 8 years without a championship with all these teams. So that's what we're looking forward to as we get this restart. We're excited about pro sports coming back. We're excited about the prospect of watching live action, which we're going to have. We have that right now. But what do we really have is now we get to the nitty-gritty. Come on, let's get into it again. You know, we spent the last 20 weeks, by the way, this is week 20 for us, out of the studio. 20 weeks out of the studio. 20 weeks without pro sports in New York, other than a draft. That's it. The only live action we have had is the draft. And then we spent a lot of time on The Last Dance. Where are we right now? That's where we are. So we've done a lot with a little to talk about sports, and we've talked about the past. But right now, it's talking about the future. That's what it's time to do right now. Look forward. What do you have to look forward to now that New York sports is plugged back in and up and running again? What do you have to look forward to? And what team do you believe in the most? I think it's pretty clear. There's only one team that you could put your hard-earned money on and feel like you've got a shot. And that's the Yankees. Everyone else is so far away. Far away, not even close. And you can make a case if you want for the Mets. You could try. And you could say maybe Brooklyn with Kevin Durant and Kyrie next year have a chance. But next year, now you're telling me there's always next year. Now we become the Cubs. When do we become Chicago? This is what, you see what I mean? This is what you do to yourself. Well, what about next year? There's always next year. How about next year? How about now? How long do we have to wait? How about now? Our teams are going through rebuilds. Our teams are constantly making transition, constantly making changes. But the one constant are the Pinstripes, are the Yankees. And all they've got to do is stay healthy. Because to me, what we saw over this weekend, what we saw against not the best of the best that the Mets are going to put out there on the mound, but still, you're going to see a lot of those guys on the mound. What did they do? They demolished what is the one strength of the Mets, pitching. Demolished it. Completely destroyed it. That says a lot, because the one thing the Mets can do is pitch. So you have the Yankees. What else do you got? Again, 800-919-3776. And also, again, as you watch the games, you take away from watching baseball with no fans, baseball with, you know, piped-in crowd noise. Baseball without the ambiance of having a home crowd or any intensity at all. That's what you watched. I gave you my take. It didn't really bother me. It's fine. I'm actually now really curious to watch an NBA game, even scrimmages that start on Wednesday. Curious to watch that. What's that going to look like? What's that going to sound like? Makes me even more curious about it. Does it make you focus more on the game? A little more in tune in the game now? You know, like the game broadcast directors don't have to worry about showing a crowd shot anymore. No reason to. No reason to watch any of that. Now, keep it on the game. Focus on the game. Pay attention to the game. And maybe the game will be just as entertaining. 800-919-3776 is the number. That's Straight Talk. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. Let's take James in Spring Valley. Start us off today. James.
Hey, I'm Han Solo. What's going on, man?
What's happening?
What's going on? Not much. I'm surprised you didn't put the Islanders as the team you would trust. They're Barry Trotz, the system, Lou Lamoriello. I'm surprised you didn't put that team.
I don't trust the team, but I don't trust the goaltending.
All right, fair enough.
Okay. That's it. And they don't have an offense that can outscore it. So I don't trust the goaltending for the Islanders. I just still think it's an issue, which is why they had to get Sorokin over here and sign him. But you won't see him till next season. So I love the team. I love the system. I think Trotz a great coach, and he's got a great system that could do damage in the playoff structure that they have right now. But it's always about your goalie, and both of those guys to me have had shaky enough moments for me to worry if I can count on them.
Fair enough. Now let's talk about the Yankees. Now I think this is the Yankees have to win the World Series. You got Gerrit Cole. This is the team that you feel confident. But here's a question: who is the team that you feel is a biggest threat to the Yankees? Is it still the Astros, the Dodgers? Which team is the biggest threat to them?
Dodgers. Nobody else. No. The Astros. See, the key with the Astros. And thanks, James. Good to hear from you. The key with the Astros is going to be the idea that there are no crowds. You talk about a saving grace, and once again, how cheaters win. I mean, doesn't it just piss you off? Like, they should be getting crushed this year in every building. 81 games, they should be getting booed off the field. But they're not. They won't hear anything. Not a peep. Nothing. And that's going to benefit them because they're still a good roster. Not as good as they used to be, but they're still very good. And with that in mind, they skate through this thing. And by 21, will anybody even remember? Will anybody even care to remember? People be so happy to be back in the building, they might not even bother booing them anymore. Now, when they come to Yankee Stadium, they'll probably hear it. They probably will. But that's it. They were supposed to get crushed in every building they went into. And it's not going to happen for them now. And they could benefit from that. EJ in New Jersey. EJ.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
You said there's no good teams in New York. What about the Rangers and the Islanders?
I mentioned the Islanders and their system. I worry about their goaltending. When I say there's no good teams in New York, I mean I'm talking about winning a championship now. I'm talking about raising the stakes. And I don't think either one are close. I think they're on their way, but I don't think they're close. So I think the Rangers still have to get a little bit older, but this will be a great experience for them. And they obviously think they found the goalie of the future in Shesterkin, and this will be a great test to see if he can handle what is going to be playoff intensity. Now, no crowds, but still playoff intensity. So it'll be a great test for him and a great way to see how he holds up. But when you talk about the Rangers and their ability to win a championship, be a championship-caliber team, I wouldn't say they are right now. They could be getting closer to it, but they're not right now.
Well, you also said no one was close, but I think if you want to compare any teams, the Rangers are probably the closest to the Yankees as being.
Rangers closest? Not the Nets? I would say Brooklyn's closer.
You think so?
Well, you got two of the best players in the game on their roster. So that's why I would say that. Once again, hockey's difficult. Hockey's the hardest championship to win. I'll say it again. The Stanley Cup is the hardest championship to win. You can argue with me all you want. You'll lose every time. It's because it is the one sport where there's the most parity now. Everybody has a chance. Injuries change everything, and goaltending completely changes the game as well. One more. Sully in the Poconos, Sully.
How we doing, man? Mr. Han?
What's up?
You know what? I'm going to go with the Rangers. You know, you could pick your Nets, but you know what? Your two boys don't want to play. So
they don't want to play now, but they will want to play once we get to December and they start the new season. Then they'll be ready to play.
That's if and when. And when I see them on the court, then I might believe it. But other than that, you know, when it comes to the Rangers, yeah, we might be a little bit young, but the one thing that we're stacked on is goaltending. And
yes,
if you look at the first round, when we go through Carolina, I think we'd be smart enough to start Lundqvist. I think the guy's got the history, and not only that, he's got the experience, and he knows Carolina.
The only problem there, though, Sully, is if you start with the king and he fails, then you go to the kid. If the kid can't handle it, how do you go back to Henrik after he's already failed? You see what I mean? Like, well, like that makes it dicey to me. I think you go with the kid, and if the kid fails, then you go to the vet, and then you can rely on him. And thanks for the call, Sully. Look, you know, I know Ranger fans are going to get all upset because I'm not saying they're a championship contender. They're not. It doesn't mean they aren't heading towards something. I think they have a great coach, and they got a smart GM and a really smart front office. They're doing things the right way. The Rangers are what the Knicks should become. At least I'm hoping they become. That's what I'm hoping. And they're in the same damn building. But the bottom line is when we're talking about ending a drought, the team that has the best chance to do it are the Yankees, and there's no one close. No one. 8 years. This is the longest and worst run in New York sports in a very long time. The longest and worst we've been through. And I'm just saying, now we're happy. The restart. We're back. We can talk sports again. And that means this topic has to be the first one we bring up. Why our teams suck and why we've got to get out of this. Tweets are good. Getting the tweets at Alan Hahn, also at Barton Hahn on Twitter. And all the reactions to this, as we're talking about, you know, we watched Mets and Yankees this weekend. And the ratings were through the roof on Saturday night for the first game, which is a good sign. It means we were starving for something live, even though it didn't count. These are scrimmages, but yet it was live baseball. It was live sports. It was in New York, and we got into it. And, you know, no crowd in place. I didn't care. I really didn't care. Canned noise, you know, the canned crowd noise, and stuff, it didn't really bother me. Got me more focusing on the game a little bit. Maybe for now I'll like it. Maybe when the games really matter, it might bother me. I don't know. Not sure. But all I know is that I enjoyed watching it. But now that we're back, and we've got opening day on Thursday, we've got, again, we'll have that Yankees National 7 o'clock right here on 98.7 ESPN. You've got NBA scrimmages are going to start, I think, on Wednesday. You'll have that. And we're getting closer and closer. NHL next week, we'll have, I mean, literally in 2 weeks, we're going to have everybody playing. And also, as you're following the NFL saga, as the owners, Shefty's saying the owners are going to meet today around 2 o'clock and start hammering out the details of their return to play and all the protocols that they will have so they can open up their training camps on Monday where the rookies are supposed to start showing up. So that's what they're doing as NFL players are putting out the We Want to Play hashtag, asking a million questions that they obviously should be asking right now about their return to play. What is the NFL's plan? So you'll have training camps pretty soon, it seems. So all that's happening. And now that we're back into sports, and we're not talking about the last dance, and we're not talking about drafts, and we're not talking about old classic games and old debates, we got to talk about some reality. And that is, as Elias Sports Bureau put out, and as I've talked about many times on my shows at night, New York sports has had a horrific run here. 8 years of losing. And I don't mean losing records, of course. I mean not winning a championship. You guys understand, this is the longest we have gone since the Giants won their second Super Bowl. It's the longest New York has gone when you consider all of the teams that are available. It's a collection of 72 seasons. Includes the Devils. Right, we got everybody involved. All the New York area teams. No one's won a title. No one. That's the longest we have gone. 8 years without a title. And that is something, and I mean, that is something that if you're a New York sports fan, we cannot continue to accept. So let's get back into that. We watch the Yankees this weekend, and we look at a team that's got a great chance to win a championship, and they should. They're an exciting team. It's easy to fall in love with this team. They've got everything you could possibly want. Everything. So I love this team, and they've got a shot. But after them, who else? Who else are you feeling? And oh, by the way, before I get back to the calls, 800-919-3776, ESPN, so well-timed, put out an NFL future power rankings projections, all 32 teams for the next 3 years. So they had a panel of experts, ESPN insiders. You have Lewis Riddick, smart guy, Field Yates, Jeremy Fowler, Seth Walder. All right, and they rate all the teams, the quarterback, the remaining roster, the draft, front office, coaching, all of it, right? Graded it all. Put it together, and then made a list of who had the highest scores. The number one team are the Baltimore Ravens. Number one team. The Chiefs are actually the number two team, which is kind of amazing if you think about it, right? You got the Niners, the Saints, believe it or not, with an old Drew Brees. And then the Cowboys are the top five. That rounds out the top five. Now, if you want to get to where the local teams are, scrolling and we're scrolling and we're scrolling and
what do you
we're
use
scrolling.
But you set me up for the butt.
Yeah, we're still scrolling. Sorry, Bart. Still scrolling. Still scrolling. Still scrolling. Yeah, no, we're still. Oh, there we are.
What happened to all the sunlight?
The Jets are ranked 28 out of 32 teams. 28. 28. And the biggest worry they list, what do you think? Adam Gase. The biggest concern is the coach. And that's a big deal. It's your freaking coach. That matters. That's why the Knicks have to hire the right guy. That's why this is a very big week for the Knicks. You got to make sure you get the right guy in here so that the revolving door stops. No more. Do you know, like, since the Giants championship, New York teams are averaging four coaching changes. Average of four. Coaching changes. In 8 years, four? I can understand two, four. That means you're not getting it right the first three times. You're hoping you got it right now. The Jets are on their third coach since then. Third. And no one seems to think this guy can get the job done. Huge pressure on him. So over the next 3 years, the Jets are considered 28th when it comes to future potential in the league. Where are the Giants? Right below them. 29. What's their issue? Gettleman. Again, leadership. He has to, and what they say here, and this is Lewis Riddick, he has to have nailed the Joe Judge selection as head coach. You got to get that right. A lot of pressure once again on the coach. Got to get that right. You also got to make sure that Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley have everything they need to be successful, because those are the biggest draft picks you made and gigantic decisions when you think about it. Passing on quarterbacks for Saquon. Taking Jones where you took him. I mean, that everything now lies on Gettleman. So it's once again not even about the talent you have on the team, but those who are running the franchise, whether it's the head coach or whether it's your general manager. So the biggest issues with the two local football teams are the fact that there is question marks about their leadership. And that's why teams don't do well. What is one thing you can say about the Yankees? The stability they have in the front office is, there's no other team with that. It's Brian Cashman. For every mistake he makes, and there's been a lot of them, and we overlook them, and we don't want to talk about them, that's fine. Because you know why? He's done so many other things right that it's so easy to, every time you bring up one of the things that you don't like about, well, you know, he did this, he made this mistake, he made that mistake. Why are you doing Stanton? Stanton was a complete disaster. Why would you make that trade, right? Why would you make a decision here and make a decision there? But then it's also, well, wait a minute. Look what else he did. Look at how he got Gleyber Torres. Look at how he gets Gerrit Cole, like the white whale. He finally gets the white whale. Look at the bullpen he built. Look at the trades he's made. Look at how he turned the team around when it was time for a rebuild, and he did it like that. So all that stuff still has to factor in. So leadership is everything. And when you don't have confidence in the leadership, you don't have confidence in the future of your franchise. And for ESPN and their experts, the Jets and Giants, not a lot of confidence in their future. 800-919-3776. Rob's in Manhattan. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I guess I'm a glass half full kind of guy, because, you know, I know 8 years for a championship's a long, without a championship is a long time, but we've had contending teams in that time. And if I see teams fighting hard in the postseason and giving me a chance to believe, I'm feeling good about it. The Yankees, as you just mentioned, had a rebuild in like record time, to going from, you know, too old and unable to compete to being sort of young and exciting and challenging for a championship again. The Rangers, I mean, I don't know, Dolan, I guess he just gets out of the way in hockey, but you know, maybe, you know, they're a really exciting team, and, you know, maybe they wouldn't have made the playoffs this year, but they were certainly trending toward that direction, you know, to be qualifying for playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs in hockey, it's, you know, everyone's got a puncher's chance, as long as you get great goaltending and good defense.
That's the caveat, though. That's the caveat, though, Rob. Rob, right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the optimism. You got to have it. The teams are definitely, they definitely bank on your optimism. But I will throw in there that you mentioned how, you know, you've had appearances in the finals. Again, that's a participation trophy, and that's what we've become. We lowered our standards when you do that. You lower your standards. Let's take Jimmy in Staten Island. Jimmy.
Hey, what's going on, Roger? How you doing, brother?
Good.
Honestly, in my opinion, I think that you would definitely I correctly stand with you. I'm automatically with you with the Yankees and Brooklyn. I don't see how people are calling and saying any other New York team besides Brooklyn. That's going to be the closest thing. You have KD, who's 31. You have Kyrie, who's 28. You know, they're 29. You understand? They have a young core. I mean, the Rangers, I think they're a great team. I think they're a young team, but they're gonna come with their bumps and bruises.
You're gonna learn a lot from the Rangers. You're going to learn a lot from the Rangers in this playoffs and see what they look like, especially their younger guys like Zibanejad, who's really coming into his own. Obviously, Panarin, who's becoming a star. But the most important thing will be Shesterkin and what he looks like in goal. Thanks, Jimmy. I mean, I think, and then on the net side of things, I think that all eyes are on them. And keep an eye. It's not just going to be Kyrie and KD when they start next season. I'm telling you right now, there's going to be a third guy added to that list. You watch. They're going to get one more guy, and that's what's going to make them a very interesting team. Chris in Levittown. Chris.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for the opportunity to talk on the show.
I
think one of the reasons why New York teams suck is because the character of New York is changing, and it's changing for the worse, and I don't think great players necessarily want to come play here.
That's interesting, because in baseball, that's not an issue. In the NFL, that's not an issue. It's only an issue when it comes. Actually, in hockey, it's not an issue either because the Rangers were able to get Panarin. So the issue only exists, and it didn't exist for the Nets. The only time great players don't want to play in New York is for the Mets and for the Knicks. And I think, you know, you only got to look at their track record. You want to come and win, but you also don't want to be scrutinized the way you are when you play for the Knicks and when you play for the Mets, I should say. So I don't think anything has changed when it comes to players wanting to play in New York. I just think it's the fact that there's certain teams that have tried too hard to get stars and fall short. Thanks, Chris. Sam is in Queens. Sam.
Hi. Long time listener, first time caller.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out how Boston has four teams, and they're way more successful than New York's eight teams. My best buddy's always teaching me about it. He's a Boston fan. Just want to know how it is that those four teams are always better in the past 15 years.
Sam, I'm telling you, it's a great question. It's basically that, and Boston used to be that place. Other than the Celtics, they couldn't win anything for a long, long time. And thanks for the call, Sam. I appreciate it. And tell your friend to pipe down because things are going to change pretty quickly. I promise you. All right, but I used to say the same thing. Boston couldn't win anything. Now it's all they do. The Patriots, what they do? They got the coach that the Jets couldn't keep. Why? Because Belichick didn't trust the transition in ownership when the Jets were going through when he took over. He didn't trust things were going to go well, so he left. And he went to New England where Robert Kraft basically is willing to spend what it takes. He built a beautiful place. So a Patriot place is unbelievable. I know Anthony couldn't wait for me to bring that up. They did a great job with the stadium and what they built there, off the charts. You have all that going on, so you have that owner that is stable. What they did with the Celtics was they built a big three that they did. They got Doc. They were able to figure it out after a long run where the Celtics were terrible for a while, real bad. After the Bird era, they were really bad. So they got that done. Now they're very competitive. They made a smart decision in hiring a guy like Brad Stevens. Most important thing is you get, you know, again, Danny Ainge. You trust him and you get out of the way. Let him work. Just let him work. Get out of the way. And that's what happens. You know, they're going to make mistakes. You're going to do well, and then you're going to drop off for a bit, and you can't panic when you have a little bit of a reset after some success. That's another big part of it, too. You know, the Bruins, the same thing. They built the team. And what I love about the Bruins is that they are what the city is. They built that Bruins team based on the history. Big, bad Bruins. A big, heavy, nasty team. They're not trying to be that small, fast team that everybody in the league wants to be. And that's not who we are. We're the Boston Bruins. We're the big, bad Bruins. And we've got to be that. And that's what I always say. I beg the Knicks. You guys, stop following trends and go with what everybody knows you to be. It's tough, rugged, physical, defensive-minded team. The Knicks have always been good when they have teams like that. Every city, you have to embrace who you are. And the identity of your teams, and certain teams do well. And the Bruins did it, and they've done it very well. The Knicks need to do it too. But Boston got it right. They got it right mainly because they got their management in place, and they got their management right. And, of course, the Red Sox. I mean, can Theo come in and run the Mets? I mean, he's done miracles in Boston and in Chicago. Can he come to the Mets now and do the same thing? Ryan Rucco joins us right now. Rooks, first of all, I'm looking forward to being able to finally hear this.
Goodbye, sir.
When are we going to get that from you?
Good question, Alan. I don't know yet when you will get it. Well, actually, I do know the answer. You will never get that call again because it's, you know, John Filippelli put the kibosh on it a few years ago. But I hope you will get a home run call at some point, man. It's weird, though. I was just doing my game boards yesterday, getting ready for Nets and WNBA coming up end of next week, and end of this week, rather, for WNBA. And dude, it feels so strange, like, doing game boards again. Like, you know, just getting back in play-by-play mode after you're going. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have 4 months of none of that, and now it's going to really ramp up. So I'm excited to get back, but it feels weird.
Yeah, I mean, you do basically everything. So you have Nets, you have WNBA, you have NBA as well, and then, of course, the Yankees stuff. So you go from 0 to 100. You go from the guy that, you know, I know you have the great podcast, of course, with CeCe Sabathia, and we got some Star Wars to talk in a minute. But, you know, now all of a sudden, it's like, I imagine for you, your schedule goes from, boy, when am I going to get back to work, to it's all coming at you really fast, and you've got to be able to transition what you're great at from one sport or even one team or two teams to something else. But I imagine you're embracing this.
Oh, yeah, dude, 100%, man. I can't wait. You know, I want to do as much, you know, Yankees, as much Nets on YES as possible. I want to do as much WNBA and NBA on ESPN as possible. Like, I, you know how much I love this. Like, it's, you know, it's a passion for me and an art and a craft, and I'm obsessed with play-by-play, and I've missed it, man. Like, I've really missed that feeling of, you know, painting the picture and calling the action and getting lost in the energy of the moment. And so I will take as much of it as I can. When I was talking with our coordinating producer for WNBA, Sarah Guerrero, and I said, she said, like, yeah, we're probably going to get some more games. And I was like, oh, awesome. And she's like, yeah, there's going to be, you know, like 24 national games. Usually we do 16, you know, between July 24th and August 13th. And I was like, oh, you mean July 24th and September 13th when the regular season ends? She's like, no. I mean August 13th. I was like, whoa. So we're doing just in WNBA, we're doing, you know, 50% more games than we normally do, and we're doing that in just the first 3 weeks of the regular season. Wow. And I could not be happier about it, yeah. Nor could Rebecca Lobo, because we're all, you know, we're all starved for sports, man. We can't wait to get back.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Just seeing what we saw ratings-wise over this weekend, right? Like, Yankees-Mets,
yeah, yeah.
Scrimmages. Like, they weren't even, like, they don't count. And yet, I know it was a Saturday night. I was tuned in. Both nights, yep. Locked in watching. But I'm also the nerd that was watching when you guys on YES were covering inter-squad scrimmages. I mean, I'm tuned into that. That's how hungry we are here. But that's a good sign, isn't it? That we are starting to get back to some normalcy. And with that, we're allowed to now start talking about not old classic games and old classic debates and the last dance and things like that. We can start talking about, okay, where are we? And what's the future like? I watched the Yankees this weekend, and my take was they are that team that when you watch them and at full health, this could be, and I know it's going to be an odd year because it's 60 games. I get that part of it. But just in general, when we look back on this season, this could be a real special team. Just looking at it from the pitching standpoint, the youth standpoint, and obviously the power that they have and the depth that they have.
Yeah, 100%. Alan, I totally agree, man. Watching it, I've obviously been working it, so yeah. I've been locked in, but I've also just been locked in as a fan as well, trying to consume all the content I can, right, in advance of the season because we're so starved for it. And I've loved watching them throughout these inter-squad games. And then the last couple nights, finally seeing them face a different opponent. And, you know, they look like a well-oiled machine, which is remarkable given, you know, obviously the constraints that everyone has dealt with over the last 4 months. For them to look as as sharp and as focused as they have. And, you know, sometimes we talk about mentality and we kind of use it as a cliche, right? Or you know, something that, yeah, you know what, they've got the right attitude. And you're like, okay, did that really tell me anything? But I actually believe with this particular season, the Yankees having the mentality that they do and the focus that they do is very important, because this would be a year, because of how irregular it is, that I think it'd be a lot easier to not be all in, you know, to not be so championship focused, to feel like, all right, well, you know, we're going to do this because this is what we do. We want to get paid. But like, yeah, this doesn't really feel like our normal competition. This is weird. Or if you have a key player who's not there, you know, like let's say even competitive teams like the Dodgers or Braves, Dodgers would be without David Price, Braves without Nick Markakis. Like, I do wonder how it affects the collective energy of the group when you know, like, hey, like one of our key pieces, like he decided like this wasn't worth it. You know, it's not like he was hurt and we have to overcome it. Like, he decided like, eh, this isn't the right thing for me to do. Like, I don't think this is a smart choice. Like, I do think that could cut away at a team's energy a little bit. So the fact that the Yankees have all these guys who clearly were working during the quarantine period, clearly are focused and all have had the right mentality as far as what you'd want to hear as a fan, like, hey, you know, we don't care if it's short in season, we want a championship. Like, I actually think that's going to be a real advantage for this group.
We're talking with Ryan Rucco, old friend, joining us here on the show as he's about to get real busy covering just about everything NBA, WNBA, Yes Network with the Nets, and also with the Yankees as well. And just staying on the Yankees and really just more of what we saw this weekend, Yankees and Mets, both at Citi Field and also at Yankee Stadium. You saw cutout fans in the background, which was kind of a cute thing, a little funny. But you heard the piped in crowd noise, which we were all wondering, you know, what's that going to sound like? Is it going to be kind of weird? Is it going to be kitschy? Is it going to be, you know, are we not going to like it? I got to be honest, from a broadcast perspective, and again, you working as well, so I know you're tuned into it, and I know you heard some of it also on Friday and some of the scrimmages. It didn't bother me, and I don't feel like, and maybe it's just baseball, I'd be curious to see what it starts looking like when we do it, when we see NBA. It doesn't seem like it takes too much away, and I almost feel like I was focusing that much more on the game because it was all that was happening. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think it, you know, for me, I like it. I think that as much as, look, it's a television product now, right? It is going to be for some period of time exclusively a television product. And so now you have to think about how can you make it the best experience possible for the viewer. It's not like it's not inauthentic because we all know the deal, right? Like, nobody's like trying to hide the fact that like there's more noise. You know, this isn't the Colts and the Patriots pumping in crowds noise. You know, like, I mean, this is, we all know exactly what it is, and because of that, I think it's easier to accept, and then it sort of like can trance you into more of a focused watch to what you were talking about, Alan, and then also like a little more sense of normalcy and engagement and importance. So I actually like it. Like, does it feel a little weird? Yeah, of course it does, but I do like it. I like it better than silent. And I have to say, I actually liked the cardboard cutouts.
I did.
I know they look kind of funny and weird and whatever, but to me, I actually like that look. When you're, you know, watching a game and you're seeing either empty seats behind home plate or seeing that, I actually think there's some value to having, you know, some form of activity there. You know, I'm all for it. Whatever we can do to create the television product and make it as close to, you know, what it would normally be like as possible and as enhanced as possible. I'm open to virtual fans, Alan. I'm open to all of that stuff because I think for the time being, and hopefully it's not the whole season, right? Hopefully at some point you do get some portion of the crowd in there, even if they're socially distanced and in masks. But for the time being, I want to do whatever I can to enhance the television product.
Yeah, I'm hoping because, you know, we see NASCAR already letting, you know, a smaller percentage of their capacity in. And, you know, we'll see how that works out for them long term. But if you get to a World Series, even to get to a championship level. Like I'm even hoping for the NBA too, that if the NBA can figure out how to at least have some people in the building for at least the NBA finals, just to give it a little bit more of a big time feel. But you know, I go back to what Gerrit Cole said on Friday. And by the way, he hasn't pitched a meaningful pitch yet for the Yankees, and he's my favorite player. I mean, I love listening to him talk about the game. I love how just he nerds out about it, and yet he's also such a fierce competitor as well. Having a guy like that in the clubhouse, having a guy like that on your team is so valuable, just to have a guy like him. But he even said it, and it's not like I'm paying attention. I don't really – you hear the crowd a little bit. You hear the fake crowd noise a little bit. It doesn't really bother you. You know, even the cutouts or something like that. He's like, I'm not the type that looks into the crowd anyway. But when you are watching just the game, I caught myself doing this too when they played at Citi Field. If I'm watching just the battery, all you're seeing are kind of faces in the crowd behind. And so I'm not focused on them. And it almost feels like, oh, there's people there. You know, I believe there was a scout sitting among them at one point.
Right?
There was somebody sitting there, and it was like it all just looked blended together. So I guess we can get away with it a little bit on that. But as we transition to the NBA stuff, and I'm sure the WNBA is going to have the same type of deal as well. And you mentioned some of the virtual crowd. I believe it was it MLS that's been doing that with the Matrix boards and people from home?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so, yeah.
Can you do that in the NBA? Would that work?
That's a good question, Alan. I don't know. I mean, I think the good news is, you know, the NBA is certainly very open-minded to any possibility, you know, and whatever is going to be cutting edge. And so, you know, I think that you will see, you know, certain things that are, you know, new and feel like, you know, ways to enhance the television product so that it doesn't feel like basketball in an empty gym, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what all those specifics will be, but I'm sure you're going to see some of them. And I think you should, you know, I think you should. I think that, you know, we have learned over the last 4+ months how to adapt technologically, right? And how to make this happen. Like, I don't know, Alan, if you're at home or back in the studio now doing the show, but like we, you know, obviously for a period of time, everybody had to adjust to, okay, you're only going to, you know, operate from home. Okay, now you're going to go in certain days, whatever. Point being is, like, we had to dive into aspects of technology we didn't know mm-hmm. necessarily existed or that we could make as efficient as we needed to be to uphold the standard of product. But I think, like, you know, we a lot of times, especially in the sports world, right, we're traditionalists and we don't want to see things change. But, like, this thrusts us into change. And who knows? Like, we might love virtual fans. It might be like, yo, this is great. Like, it, for me as a viewer, like, if it's someone real on TV or it's not, what do I care? It's not like I have a relationship with the people I'm seeing behind home plate in the shot. You know, it's just sort of creating the ambiance for me.
Right.
So if you put virtual people there, like, maybe it just creates more of an ambiance. Same thing with like NBA crowd. You know, for the players, I don't know if it's going to do much for them, but for the viewer at home, I actually do think that stuff can enhance the experience, even though it's going to be a little weird.
Yeah. Again, it's the new normal, as we talk about. And by the way, it's now 20 weeks I have been out of the studio. 20 straight weeks we've been doing this show out of the studio. And as you said, I know you guys have done it at Yes as well. It's you figure it out. I mean, Bart and I will use FaceTime during the show so we can at least see each other while we're doing the show. And you know how it works. You've done it. You have to make the eye contact sometimes. You got to, you know, put your hand up or whatever. So we do it that way. And it's become so normal. We've spent more time out of the studio than we have in the studio together since the show started in January. Isn't that it's crazy,
yeah.
But that's just
crazy.
What we've gotten. We've gotten used to it, you know, and that's what we all have to do. But we are, again, it's still competition. And it's going to be about who can win and what we're going to see out of these teams. And as we get ready for the NBA to restart, I mean, it's got to be LeBron and the Lakers that everybody has their eyes on. Can LeBron do this sprint with that team and win that championship that you know for him is going to be critically important for him and his legacy? Or is this the type of scenario, because of no crowds, because it's in a bubble and players are around each other and stuff, that this could be the one that is that year where, like, anyone can win? because it's just so different and so odd. Like you mentioned, no crowds, no home crowd, no home court advantage, no intensity, none of that stuff. Some guys might actually be more comfortable with the fact that there aren't crowds. I think James Harden might thrive. Like, I think the Rockets might be that team I'd be afraid to play against, because a guy like him, you know, hears everything. But when he's just in his zone, he might be the most dangerous player in the game. So when you're thinking about the NBA, and obviously you'll be calling some games too, do you think that this could be a wide open race, or do you still think it's typical NBA? There's probably three teams that have the best chance to win this thing.
No, I think it's more wide open. I actually very much subscribe to your theory on the Rockets and James Harden, and I believe that they will be an incredibly dangerous team. I think that, you know, the reason why I think it's more wide open is just because you've drastically multiplied the variables, right? Like, and when you do that, there's going to be more of a chance that things happen differently than they normally do or that you plan for. You know, it looked like it was going to be Lakers or Clippers out of the West, right? And right. I would have said it was going to be Bucks or Celtics out of the East. But, you know, the margin between these teams is not so drastic that you couldn't have, let's say, you know, one team who had, you know, two key pieces who were all in on their workouts over the last 4 months and one team who didn't, you know, and maybe that affects the, you know, their efficacy or their ability to ramp up endurance wise, or, you know, in some ways, even the chemistry, you know, on floor, you know, or, you know, you could have a team that was like kind of on the brink. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Toronto Raptors are a tougher team than they would have been maybe in the playoffs, like this time around. Because, like, I really, really think that Nick Nurse is about as good as it gets when it comes to ingenuity and winning a single game, you know, and developing the proper mindset of his group. And could he not say, like, you know, I mean, could he not get that group flowing and believing that, like, why couldn't you upset somebody in this circumstance? You know, I just think that, like, I think that when you break the normal inertia of the season, all of a sudden, like, things don't feel inevitable. You know, it kind of feels like a new slate. And because of that, I do think it widens the field. You know, maybe in the East it widens it so that Toronto is even more of a viable player and Philadelphia is, you know, and you're looking at them and you're saying, hey, you know, these teams can really compete. Or, you know, maybe in the West it does welcome in a team like, you know, like Houston, you know, or maybe an upset in one round. But the other more tangible thing, Alan, why I think it widens is the virus itself. You know, if you have one team end up with a key player who gets it and they miss 2 weeks, you know, and I mean, I know that goes without saying and that's nothing we can predict, but like, that's why I think the field opens up even more, you know, because, you know, there is, you know, there's a real chance, and the NBA is doing a great job mitigating it as much as humanly possible. But, you know, there's a chance that you're going to have some key team lose a key player in a playoff series and then not be able to get back on the floor. And if that happens, you know, obviously that could swing a series one way or another. So I think it's going to feel like a crapshoot. I do think, Alan, that when you talk about the teams competing and the players competing, I think that they're going to, you know, regardless of crowd or whatever, I think they're going to be fully invested because, you know, when you're on that floor going up against somebody else who's great at their craft, you know, you just want to beat them. You know, you do. Like, when you're a competitor, you just want to beat them. So that part of it, I think, will feel like normal when we're watching the players actually compete against each other. But I just think the circumstances around it widen the field a bit.
Yeah, I do agree that when it is a legit game, you're definitely going to see the competition level rise up. And it's also the great players are the ones that are going to dictate that too, because they're the ones that are going to decide where this scrimmage is going. If you've ever seen those scrimmages in those gyms, the best players are the ones that really decide how hard we're going to play today. And I think you'll certainly see that. But it's going to feel like AAU. And for a lot of guys, it's going to that part, I think, will also play into this thing. Before I let you go, and again, Ryan Rucco joining us here. And Rooks, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for giving giving us some time here.
Yeah, man.
Sabrina Ionescu, what does she mean for not just the Liberty, but for the WNBA? You're going to be calling a lot of their games. A superstar coming out of college, a player who really, again, became more of a mainstream athlete that everybody got to know. The league has seen players like this come into it, but she, there's something special about her with the next generation of fans. What does she mean, and how excited are you to see what she can do at this level?
Man, I'm so excited. And, you know, I do think that it shows our engagement and interest in her, right, that we have her in our opening game. You know, we have Seattle, New York, which will happen this Saturday at noon. And it'll be, you know, Sue Bird against Sabrina Ionescu, you know, the best point guard in the league's history against, you know, one who certainly hopes to rise to that place. So I think that Sabrina is amazing for the sport because she crosses over like you're talking about, because she's a star who, you know, even the casual sports fan has heard of. I also think that the Liberty being good is going to be good for the league as well. And I do think Sabrina will bring wins to this team, even if it's not this year, because of how many rookies they have. I think they'll be better than people would think. And I think eventually they will be, you know, a championship contender. And then, you know, when we get back to normal, you're going to have, you know, Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving sitting courtside
going
at Barclays
right.
Center to watch Sabrina. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that stuff's great for the league. I think it's huge. You know what? I also think her connection with Kobe is huge. You know, Kobe was an incredible ambassador for the WNBA. And I think, you know, they had, I mean, she would call Kobe her best friend. You know, she had this incredible connection to Kobe. And I think she almost, you know, takes the torch, even though she was going to be on the floor and he was going to be off it. You know, he was going to be this very front and center champion of the league, you know, and now she is sort of the player that embodies the support of Kobe, you know. And so for all those reasons, and most importantly, her incredibly dynamic skill set and competitive nature, I think she's going to be must-watch TV. And I think she's going to be a real factor in the league for years to come, and sports in general. Like, she will definitely permeate the New York sports scene. You will at times on your show talk about Sabrina Ionescu, and that's good.
Wow, you're calling it now. I'll take it. All right, before I let you go, Rooks, I can't let you go without at least one little Star Wars thing. All right. I saw you tweet that, because I've seen rankings for the movies, and everybody wants to power rank them, you know, all the different episodes, right? And
yes,
you have Return of the Jedi as number one over to me, arguably the greatest sequel ever in movie history. Yeah, I said it. Empire Strikes Back. Explain yourself.
Well, okay, so you are right in the sense of Empire Strikes Back, I would say, is a better movie. Okay, if I had to just break down quality,
the greatest
movie,
twist
right?
in the history of movie making. I mean,
yeah,
the greatest dilemma.
100%. And it's not. And I am obsessed with Empire. I love Empire. It's no slight to Empire. My reason, and it's just my personal favorite. If you ask me, what do I think is the better quality movie? I still would go Empire.
Okay,
but my reason for loving Return of the Jedi and why it's number one on me is when you go to Empire Strikes Back, like, I don't think you've felt any conflict in Vader yet, right? Like, you know, he reveals right. this information, but there's no part of you that sees, like,
no, he's still
any softening on him. Yeah, right. there's no hint of softening. And my two favorite scenes come in that movie. One, when Luke goes to turn himself in to Vader, and Vader talks about, like, so you've accepted it, whatever.
Right.
And he says, "I can feel the conflict, you know, within you, Father. Mm-hmm. Come with me." The first time, not in the throne room, but the first time. And he says, "It's too late for me, son.
Right.
The Emperor is your master now," whatever, and chews him away. And then when Luke leaves, and he says, like, "Then my father is truly dead." And
right.
Vader leans on, like, that railing. You know, he leans
on
the
railing. Yeah.
And like, he's exasperated. And it's almost like he's exhaling, like, shoot, he's right. I am conflicted. And and he does this all without saying a word and without you seeing his facial expressions.
Physical.
And it's like,
yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
But Ryan,
that's my favorite scene.
But that's when he becomes emo Darth. Like, I just, I'm not, I thought it was just far more compelling.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It was far more compelling to see him literally, like, trying to, like, when he reveals that, and then I thought the conflict in Luke, as if he realized, like, now my life makes sense. Now all this stuff that I'm seeing, all these visions, all this stuff, this is now all making sense. And, oh, my God, this is really happening. Like, that was so far more compelling. But you know what? They're already yelling at me because I'm way too long. So we're going to have to do this some other time. But I love your reasoning, but I think at least we can agree that they're definitely among the top two in the great saga. But we'll discuss more at another time.
I love it.
I know you're extremely busy. Man. It's great to catch up with you again. Thanks so much. I look forward to hearing you on whatever network for whatever game, but that's your versatility, and I love it. So all the best to you, Rooks. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, brother.
So the MLB returns this week. The Bronx Bombers will start things off on Thursday night, 7 o'clock. We have the game coverage right here on 98.7 ESPN. You've got the K-Show leading right into it. And you know what else you got? You got Chris Carlin, who's doing a live pregame discussion right before the game begins. So he'll talk about the long-awaited return of baseball, the upcoming season. He might even take a question or two for those who tune into this. So how do you do it? 15 minutes before the game, so 6:45 on Instagram Live, Chris Carlin.
We'll do it live!
That's right. The 98.7 FM underscore ESPN New York Instagram account. So it's 987 FM underscore ESPN New York. Go to that Instagram account. You'll have Chris Carlin Thursday, 6:45. Jump in, ask questions, be part of the conversation, and then sit back and watch some live sports right here in New York. It's brought to you by 98.7 ESPN as well. Again, 800-919-3776 for the calls. Han Solo, because Bart is with the K-Show. So Bart and Han is just Han Solo today. Bart will be back tomorrow, but you get Bart in a couple minutes on the K-Show. But right now, we press on with Audio Files.
The Audio File.
By the way, a bit of news here. According to Steve Politi of NJ.com, Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey has told the Jets and the Giants there will be no fans in the stadium at MetLife for the coming 2020 season. That's what he says. For now, they're keeping an eye on things.
No holds bad.
But that's the plan. So no one in the building for Jets or Giants. The Eagles have said the same thing in Philly, but the Patriots still holding out hope that they can get people in their building up in Massachusetts. Can't have a hockey tournament up in Massachusetts, of course. I had a couple of those postponed, canceled, moved, everything else. But let's make sure we get the Patriots fans up there, though. Let's get them up there. They got to watch the Pats, okay?
What are you waiting for, honestly? I mean, do you want them to chop me up and feed me to the poor? Is that what you guys want?
Yeah, your cousin from Boston. All right, Audio Files, here we go. First, Mark Spears on Get Up. NBA Mark Spears. So Zion Williamson has left the bubble, as we know, with a family issue that we hope everything will be okay. And then, of course, when he is ready to return, there's a whole process of getting Zion, and it's very important we do this, back in the bubble.
It's really, really complicated. You know, his absence of 7 days or less, he has to quarantine 4 days upon his return to the bubble with a negative test needed each day. Longer than a week, he has to quarantine for 4 days. If he has a negative test, the final day, 7 days, he is gone. Without a required COVID testing, he will quarantine for 10 days. So the Pelicans will debut on July 30th. They're one of four teams that play in the first day of the resumption. It's not a lot of time between now and then. They have their first scrimmage in just a few days.
The whole idea of adding all these teams, 22 of them to be exact, was, for we all know, they wanted to get Zion involved. They'll tell you, he had teams that were close and they had a chance and we wanted to open it up and make it a little more competitive. And we didn't want to have the awkwardness of, you know, just jumping right into a playoffs for some teams that would have been tough. Sure. Yeah, that sounds great. But it's really because the league felt like we only got 37 games out of Zion. Let's get at least 8 more out of him before, and hopefully he can make the playoffs and get more. Be good bang for the buck. Well, now we'll see if Zion can play, you know, anytime soon. Now, again, this is a family emergency, and all of our thoughts are to make sure that whatever that emergency is ends up working out okay and everybody's all right. But this was part of the risk of opening up like this. Do you need all these teams? I mean, do the Washington Wizards really need to be in this thing? Especially with no Bradley Beal? You know, the Suns? The Kings? Nobody's available for the Kings. Marvin Bagley now is hurt. MRI now, he's out. It's just, it was odd that they tried to do it this way. They forced it this way. Too many people in the bubble means there's more of a chance that there will be a breach of the bubble. They got to get down to numbers quickly. And the NBA's got to work on it if they can. But no Zion's tough. We hope everything's all right. But, of course, we were looking forward to seeing what he looks like, because physically, he was looking like he was in tremendous shape. All right, moving on. So the other thing the league will announce, I don't think they've made it official yet, but I know some reports have been out there, is that the idea of the MVP and rookie and all the other awards, Zion might have had a chance to win, but pretty much looked like Ja was going to win that one. MVP, though, was still, as you remember, when the league stopped on the 11th of March, LeBron was making a push. He was right there with Giannis. Some people thought a couple more games and LeBron might get past him to win another MVP. But the league said that all voting on season awards, these eight games will not count. So the only voting that matters will, the only games that matter will be up to March 11th. So, of course, that's going to suggest that, well, Giannis probably will run away with this thing. But LeBron James says, hold up a second.
You know, show what I'm capable of doing, you know, not only individually, but from a team's perspective, us being number one in the West. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, LeBron can do those things in the East, but if he ever came to the West, what can he do? You know, so, you know, I heard all of that. And to be able to have our team at the top of the Western Conference and playing the way that we were playing at that time and the way I was playing, you know, that's definitely a good feeling.
What is that saying about if you have to tell people your credentials, you're probably not? I don't know what the saying is. I'm just making
I don't even know what you're talking about, Shorty.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a thought about it, but it's basically if you have to brag about your credentials probably aren't really up to snuff. Like he clearly was closing in on Giannis, there's no question. But if you aren't supposed to take these eight games into account, and I think actually the voting will happen before they do the restart. I don't think he wins it, don't you? Like, do you think LeBron James should be MVP based on what you saw up to March 11th? And oh, by the way, how much do you remember about what you saw up to March 11th? See, for LeBron's to his defense, the last things we remember are LeBron playing great. That's what we remember, but that's not really what the entire season up to March 11th was about. So Brian Windhorst, of course, he was on Get Up. He probably feels this way. Who is his pick for MVP?
Giannis Antetokounmpo has had one of the greatest statistical seasons we've seen in the modern era. Don't waste your money on the 5-1. Giannis is going to win the award. There's a chance that Giannis could win both MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. He's absolutely been spectacular. You look at his numbers, the raw data is absolutely impressive when you look at his efficiency and his scoring. When you think about what he does defensively for one of the greatest defenses we've seen in the regular season in at least 10 or 15 years. And you think about that he's actually played only a little over 30 minutes a game because they were protecting his minutes. A masterful season, and he's gonna get my vote, and he's going to also be a back-to-back MVP.
Wow. Okay, so he put it out there. All right, he put it out there. He got his vote. But it just makes sense. I mean, Giannis has had a great season. Once again, LeBron was closing in on him. Now, just so you mentioned that you heard the 5-1, he said. So March 5th, LeBron was a 10-1 underdog to win MVP. All right? This is Caesars that put these numbers out. By 2 days later, now remember, LeBron had that game against the Clippers where he went nuts. Completely dominates the Bucks in another nationally televised game. And then Giannis got hurt. And so all of a sudden, 2 days later, the odds for LeBron went from 10-1 to 5-1. And Giannis winning went from minus 3,000 to minus 800. So he was closing in on him, no question. But head-to-head, Giannis is averaging 29.6 a game, 13.7 rebounds, and 5.8 assists, shooting 55% from the field. Those are incredible numbers. Now, LeBron, again, nothing to sneeze at. 25.7 points, 7.9 rebounds, 10.6 assists, and 50% from the field. So you have a player. And by the way, take LeBron off the floor. The Lakers are not nearly as good. We saw it. They're just not that good. Not as good. I mean, they have Anthony Davis, but I think AD is showing us he's not a guy that carries a team. He's still not that guy. LeBron is. Take Giannis off the floor. The Bucks are still a very good team, a well-oiled machine. Are they the same team without him? Of course not. But they still are competitive. So I think LeBron's case, what he's trying to make, is that, hey, you know, my impact on winning. But, again, the fact that he would have to talk about winning an MVP, I like that he's candid about it and open about it, but, I mean, I don't know. Giannis wins it. It'll be back-to-back. That's great. But all that matters is who gets the hardware at the very end of all this, the Larry O'Brien. And I'll tell you what, if I'm putting money on the Bucks or the Lakers, I think I'm going to put the money on the Lakers instead of the Bucks. Doesn't mean I think they're going to win at all. I'm just saying, if I had those two to choose from, I think I go with the Lakers. Do you? 800-919-3776. All right, that's Audio Files. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, J-Dub. Let's take Bill in the car. Bill?
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
What's up?
I just wanted to talk to you about what you were saying about the Brooklyn Nets being the second-best team in New York. And I'll be honest, I have to see Kevin Durant prove that he can maintain his health after that surgery. I still am a little suspect on that. And also, I was wondering your thoughts on, I know you were talking about front offices being kind of the key foundational piece. Do you think if the Knicks secure that coach that we've been desperately looking for maybe 20 years now, that with all the pieces, with Leon Rose and, you know, all them other people, you know, coming in, do you think we might have a chance to start building something, you know, that we actually have a future here in New York sports? And then I guess the last question is, do you know any chance when the NFL might be lifting their hiring freeze? Because I don't have the ability to tell you what team, but I have a really good friend of mine who's basically has a contract waiting to sign to join as a coaching position for one of the NFL teams, but they can't obviously go through the official hiring process until that hiring freeze is lifted.
I didn't know there was a freeze in hiring when it comes to coaches, Bill. That's interesting that there was, but I mean, they're already trying to get, they're having a meeting actually as we speak, the owners are, to hammer out all the details about their restart or their startup, I should say, so that they can open up their buildings on Monday where the rookies are coming in for some teams and training camps will start to open up now over the next week or so. So I imagine that's what you have to look forward to is once they have that out there and once the players agree to it, then they can start getting into business. So maybe that's what your friend is waiting for. As for the Nets, I didn't say they were the second best team in New York. What I said was as far as teams that you would put your money on have a chance to win a championship next, Yankees are clear, far and away, the team that you would put your money on. You wouldn't even hesitate. After that, though, I think there's hesitation in everyone. But if there was another team, who's that team? And I just look at it as when you consider how stars win championships in the NBA, and the Nets have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and I do have a strong belief they're going to add a third star to that by the time you start the 2020-2021 season, that I would think that they are next in line. If you're putting odds on these teams, the Nets would be the team with the next best odds. It doesn't mean the next best team. I'm just saying the next best odds to win a championship would, to me, be the Nets. Then after the Nets, I mean, would it be the Mets or would it be the Rangers? You know, I mean, the Jets and Giants are far down the list. The Knicks are very far down the list, you know, obviously. But that's a question. You know, the Islanders, I think, would be in the middle there somewhere as well. So that's the question. Is who would be that next team that you would give the best odds to after the Yankees? I think that Brooklyn Nets, because of the star power they have on the roster and the way the NBA's played, that's what it'd be. And then quickly on what you asked about the Knicks and front office, the coaching hire is of utmost importance, and I'm hoping it gets done sometime this week. You know, and if they can get it done this week, then obviously then they can move forward now and start building with the team that they want, with the identity they want. And if it's Tom Thibodeau, you know the identity. And it kind of harkened back to the better days when defense was what these teams were all about. The Knicks teams, when the Knicks were top 10 in defense, they were always good. It's very, very important to their identity. So we'll see what that hire becomes. Jets and Giants. I mentioned this just earlier, and now the Jets and Giants have put out a statement, a joint statement together, reacting to Governor Murphy from New Jersey, just making it clear that there will be right now no fans allowed at MetLife Stadium for the 2020 NFL season. They put out a statement saying today Governor Murphy announced that due to ongoing public health crisis, his executive order limiting outdoor public gatherings, it will apply to events at MetLife Stadium until further notice. Now, that's the key phrase there, until further notice. So it doesn't mean that the entire season's wiped out. It just means right now, because a lot of fans are probably asking questions and wondering, hey, I got tickets. Can I go to games? I want to plan for my weekends. And so I need answers. And so what they're saying is right now, no, there will be no fans allowed in the building. So until further notice, key phrase there. Decision was reached after careful consideration and current state of COVID-19 crisis in discussions with the Jets and Giants in consideration of health and safety of our fans, players, and staff, which will continue to be the primary focus of our teams. Both teams go on to say they support the decision. And although they prefer to have fans at the games, continue to work with Governor Murphy's office and provide updates if necessary. So also the training camps and practices not open to the public. So none of that stuff that usually is available, as you know, and we every year our station we're usually at Jets and Giants camps doing shows. Several of our shows will be out there, but nope, they're closing all that stuff. So I imagine that includes us as well. Adding also, like I said, just one more part of the statement that I think is the most important is the until further notice part of it. So right now, that's the plan. Whether it continues to be that way remains to be seen, of course. All right, before we go again, Bart's on with the K-Show next, so you want to stay tuned for him. It's been Han Solo here. And I'll tell you what, I got to be honest with you. I love doing the show. Like, you guys remember, I was on with DiPietro and Canty, and I love doing that show with those guys. Rico and I go back many years, and I love doing shows with them. And the schedule just got crazy because me doing Knick games at night and West Coast games and all kinds of the back-to-backs and then having to get in that early for 10 o'clock, it was rough. It was rough. I had a newborn and just decided, like, I can't do this. So I said, let me change it up. And they were kind enough to say, well, you get Dave Rothenberg in there, who's been a star on that show now, and then move me to nights. And it actually helped me learn how to be a host. Solo at night is fun. Solo is tough. You're by yourself. You've got to carry the conversation and obviously involve the callers and those tweeting as well. And I appreciate you guys today for doing that, because I forgot. I got real lazy with Bart. It's been fun because Bart really obviously dominates and he's great. But man, I'll tell you what. It's tough doing a show alone. Sitting in my office at home. I'm not even in the studio. No one across. There's nobody on the side of the glass. There's no glass. Just me on the call screen. And no one on FaceTime. Usually I'm looking at my iPad and there's Bart's smiling face. He's not there right now. He's looking at Don LaGreca, probably RJ, maybe Andrew. Not even thinking about me and how our show's ending. But we're going to end it with a little story. A little story here. Just an example of media. I talked about this on the IG Live before the show, but I just want to point it out. Because this does happen a lot. Taj Gibson had, with his foundation, he did something in Brooklyn in his home. He's from Fort Greene. And he held something over the weekend that, you know, just to bring out some awareness and to support the community. All good stuff that he does. Now, when Taj Gibson's available for the media, you think, let's see, he played in Chicago and Minnesota for Tom Thibodeau. So, obviously, he's somebody you want to talk to about the potential of Tom taking over as the Knicks head coach, which we could hear at some point this week. And so that's why you want to cover it. And that's what happened. Now, Taj knows he didn't get the job yet. I don't really want to talk about it. So his quote is basically completely innocuous. It's just, you know, I don't want to talk about the coaching situation. You know, I'm sure they'll make the right decision. I'm focused on what my foundation is doing. Okay. And this is a story in the Post. And Mark Berman did the story. Mark Berman did the hustling to get out there and talk to him. Now, this isn't an indictment on Berman at all. This is not even an indictment on the Post. This is just, I think, an example of some reality that we need to understand sometimes when there's this narrative that's out there. Taj has a great quote that's buried in the story. And he said, the story goes on, instead of talking about his Knicks future, Gibson wanted to talk about focus of the future of youths in the streets of Brooklyn. And his quote is this: this is about young kids losing their lives because of gun violence. The city's gun violence rates have gone up, and I'm trying to step up in the community and calm the tensions. And we're going through tough times with the pandemic. Gibson also went on to praise the NYPD during his speech. So he was trying to be as inclusive as possible and calm everyone down and make everybody understand how important we all are to each other. Okay, he had a lot more to talk about. There was no follow-up, of course. At least there wasn't in the story. This quote buried at the bottom of the story. So when people tell you about, why aren't you talking more about black-on-black crime? Why aren't black people focused on that? Gun violence, everything else. These things do happen. They're just not covered the same way. Why? Because the headline is about the Knicks coach and a player who played for him. And you got to understand, unfortunately, that's the business sometimes. All right, K-Show next. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.